This is The Science of the Matter, a podcast brought to you by Medical Affairs at Astellas.
Hi, and welcome to The Science of the Matter. I am so happy to have you here because in this episode, my co-host Maria Utriainen and I meet two professors, Johanna Mulliharju and Peppi Karpinen from Oulu University in Finland. They have spent years studying oxygen-sensitive enzymes. And these enzymes are a marvel of a molecular switch that regulate how our bodies respond when faced with anemia. Actually, not only in the face of anemia, but also day-to-day to keep the count of red blood cells constant. The science of the matter that we are talking about today has contributed with major advances and was awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 2019. In this episode, we learn that there is a strong hypoxia research community that has collaborated to make this happen. The hypoxia research community even has its own anthem. Professors Karpinen and Mulliharju tells us what it was like in the lab with their primitive hypoxia chambers, an environment that could actually be quite dangerous. They describe the quick responsiveness of oxygen-sensitive enzymes and how oxygen concentration changes affects activity. There were three major scientific aha moments on their journey of what is every scientist's dream: to have your work be translated into a treatment for disease. We also learn what they're working on right now, that there are new therapeutic areas that show promise for inhibitors of oxygen-sensing enzymes. Among them are inhibitors of hypoxia-inducible factor prolyl hydroxylases. Welcome to this episode. Please enjoy.
And let me tell you a little bit about them before we begin. Dr. Karpinen and Dr. Mulliharju each lead a research group at the Extracellular Matrix Hypoxia Research Unit at the Faculty of Biochemistry and Molecular Medicine, and also are connected to the BioCenter at Oulu University in Finland. Professors Karpinen and Mulliharju have more than 25 years of experience studying enzymology, and Dr. Karpinen is a medical doctor and professor, and Dr. Mulliharju is a professor of molecular biology. They were the first to show that the HIF-PH enzymes have a very low affinity for oxygen, making these enzymes cellular oxygen sensors. They were the first to in detail study these enzymes' catalytic activity and inhibitory properties. All of this work stems from the work on collagen enzymes pioneered by Professor Kiviriko. So they are experts on enzymes regulating hypoxia response and extracellular matrix synthesis, and strive to understand the functions of these enzymes and their role in development and various pathological conditions. I hope that you are as excited as Merja and I to start this conversation. Let's get into the science of the matter. And here we are. We, Merja and I, hi Merja.
Hi.
Are sitting across from Professor Peppi Karpinen and Johanna Mulliharju on site at Oulu University. So the warmest welcome to you both.
Thank you.
We're very happy to have you on the podcast.
So take us back. When and how did you become enzyme scientists? How did your interest in the protein science start?
Well, I was originally I have studied genetics and biochemistry. I was working on chromosome proteins originally, and then when I was finishing my PhD, I noticed an ad in Helsingin Sanomat that Professor Kari Kivirikko was looking for a postdoc to work in a new project which was industrially funded, and the aim was to study the recombinant expression of human collagens. And there, a very key thing are specific enzymes that are required for this synthesis, and that is how I was diving into the enzyme world. Mm.
And you, Peppi?
Yes, I started to study medicine in University of Oulu after high school in 1990. And during the second year of the studies in the course of medical biochemistry, we had a lecture by Professor Kari Kivirikko. Mm. And that was a really inspiring lecture. He told us about the discovery of the collagen prolyl hydroxylases and his work in this field. And after the course, he was recruiting students to join his group to start a PhD project along with the medical school. And I got selected, and that's when I then became an enzyme scientist gradually.
Okay, so it seems that Professor Kaviriko was very good at recruiting
people
to his group, did a really good good job advertising in a paper. Looking back then, and maybe you can describe your research a little bit and what got you hooked on it and how it went. So maybe you can start again, Johanna.
Okay, of course, the first tasks were to develop these expression methods for human collagens. And that was the time when there was also this mad cow disease and concerns that animal-derived collagens may bear risks. Mm-hmm. And this is a complicated protein to express because it requires a lot of specific enzymes that are not existing in simple expression hosts like bacteria or insect cells or yeast. So you have to co-express a number of human genes simultaneously in order to get the modifications working on. And then another thing was that we were also studying the human collagen prolyl for hydroxylase with the interest that because collagen is so central in, for example, fibrotic diseases, that if you could develop inhibitors for the collagen prolyl for hydroxylases, that could be a therapeutic target. And then in 2001, when the hypoxia response regulation by hydroxylation, similar hydroxylation that occurs in collagens was discovered, then that was a leap to an entirely new field. And it was such an exciting time because we were many times discussing with Kari that what will we still do with the collagen enzymes? And then we realized that there is this completely new biological system that is regulated with the mechanistically similar enzymes.
So Peppi, how did you get involved? You were collaborating with Johanna?
Well, my thesis was on actually a very simple organism, Caenorhabditis elegans. So I started working on cloning the collagen prolyl hydroxylase from that organism. And really to gain more basic understanding on how these collagen prolyl hydroxylases do work. But then after my doctoral degree, I continued as a postdoc in the Kiviriko lab and I started collaborating on these HIF prolyl hydroxylase projects. And that was, of course, super exciting for me as a physician scientist because the translation to medicine, what's clearer than from working with a worm enzyme?
Yes.
So we collaborated with Johanna. It was also a bit larger group. We also had a PhD student, Maija Hirsilä, who played a key role in the beginning of the project. So there are three of these HIF prolyl hydroxylase isoenzymes, and one of us was working in one isoform. So that's how we divided the work in the beginning.
We wanted to proceed very quickly upon the discovery of the enzymes to utilize the know-how that we have on the enzymatic analysis, kinetic analysis, inhibitory analysis. So we wanted to work very quickly, so we divided that. Peppi took the HIF prolyl hydroxylase 2, I took the HIF prolyl hydroxylase 3, and Maija did the work on the enzyme 1, and we just, advanced with all these three enzymes.
But of course the background knowledge and methodology that we had developed over, and Kari's group had developed over tens of years was crucial. And that's how we were able to do it so fast.
I see. So there was both the purification as such, but it was also the enzymatic assays that were needed to study.
Exactly.
That is not simple things.
Maybe I can say that maybe Peppi and I, we are both from the, I would say, from the DNA era. Genetic manipulations and these kind of things. But then really the hard protein science, that's really something. I remember we were digging back to notes from the 1970s on some of the assays that how was it done? And I remember we were collecting like these glass bottles also that have these two arms that you can put one gas in and one gas out, and going back to these
basics.
And very important data. And I think that's also one of the strong points in our research environment, that we had Kari there, we had technicians who had been working with Kari for decades. Yeah. They had all this kind of old information and know-how that that we could then very quickly harness.
That really does describe a little bit what it was like working in the lab at that point at the university.
The first setup that we used to measure and really to establish that these HIV 4 hydroxylase are sensitive to hypoxia was very ancient, as Johanna was describing.
But
very accurate.
Very accurate. So nowadays we have the fancy hypoxia workstations that you work basically like in a baby incubator, in a preterm baby incubator with your hands in the hypoxic environment. And it was very different from, it is very different from the first setting.
Yeah, I can imagine how it has evolved over time.
And maybe a thing also because the hypoxia response is so quickly, you know, on and off depending on the oxygen concentrations. And in a regular cell culture, for example, if you put your cells into a hypoxic environment and then you take them out and you want to study, for example, if HIV is stabilized.
Right.
But when you take them out to normal room atmosphere, it's a couple of minutes and the protein is gone.
Yes.
You don't see it anymore. So
how did you come around that problem?
You harvest the protein samples within this hypoxia working station. Or then you do it really, really quickly. We had also these kind of sort of a primitive hypoxia chambers inside our incubators. And then you do it, you sort of dive into the incubator and try to put your all the solutions within try to be very quickly.
That requires some real skill. So if we translate that into the physiological situation, you're telling us that these enzymes regulate the hypoxia response quite quickly, and that in the kidney then you would have very quick responses to changes in oxygen tension and genetic responses in the end.
That's correct. Yeah. So the kidney starts to produce EPO very rapidly.
Very
rapidly. So we can see a peak when HIF gets activated. We see a peak in serum EPO levels after 6 hours of the hypoxic insult.
Yeah, and that's a protein response.
That's a protein response that you can measure from peripheral blood.
Right.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
But then, of course, erythropoiesis takes 2 to 3 weeks to hit its peak.
Yeah, so there is a discrepancy a little bit about the actual signal being very quick, but the response, 3 weeks later, I suppose, but also a quite stable response.
As long as you have sort of the HIF prolute 4 hydroxylases inhibited, either because of hypoxia or by chemical inhibition. But when you release the inhibition, then it again, you know, rapidly disappears the response.
But then we have to also remember that the hypoxia response is not only about erythropoiesis.
Right.
So a lot of regulation goes on to energy metabolism, and that is much faster than a 3 week response.
Right.
Yeah.
So can you expand on that a little bit? Say more.
Yeah. So if you think that what is oxygen needed the most in our cells, it's to make ATP. So about 90% of the oxygen is used in the mitochondria for generation of ATP. And under hypoxia, when oxygen levels are limited, you still need to be able to produce energy to survive. And that's when the cell shifts to produce energy in a non-oxidative way by glycolysis. So the HIF response also regulates those enzymes that can, first of all, increase the uptake of glucose, that's the starting molecule for glycolysis, to increase the enzymes that code for glycolysis, and also it shuts down the mitochondrial oxidative phosphorylation. So and that happens much, much faster than the erythropoietic response.
That's right. Yeah, so it's a lot more complicated than
it is a lot more complicated and spans to areas like inflammatory responses and extracellular matrix
regulation
and so forth. So it's not only erythropoiesis and iron metabolism.
Yeah, if we think that the HIF has more than, well, the number varies, let's say hundreds of target genes. All aiming into, you know, increasing the delivery of oxygen and shutting down its consumption.
So how do we think the body regulates if you don't want the entire response? I'm sure that there are pathways and inhibitory pathways and other signaling pathways converging to make sure that everything is not activated, but maybe specific responses are activated. Can you say something about that?
Well, I think it is This is a very important question, and the homeostasis is important. And there is certainly a lot of crosstalk with other signaling pathways. Also, because the HIF system in itself is a bit complex. There are, for example, isoforms of the hypoxia-inducible transcription factors. Mm-hmm. They have sort of, a specialties on what genes they induce. There might be also these HIF-prolyl-4-hydroxylase isoenzymes. They probably have some specific roles. So certainly there is this kind of a fine-tuning going on and crosstalk going on all the time to keep up the homeostasis.
Yeah, and actually there is a really clever built-in feedback mechanism in the HIF system in that way that some of the HIF-prolyl-4-hydroxylases that do target HIF4 degradation are actually also HIF targets.
Uh-huh.
As well, one of the HIF-alpha isoforms that has an inhibitory function.
Mm.
So that also regulates that the sort of like the full burst HIF response cannot be ongoing for a super long time if the system is intact.
Right, I see what you mean.
Yeah, and also I think that, so we know that the three different isoenzymes, three different HIF-alpha forms, they are not expressed uniformly.
Right.
So there are tissue specificities that also then do direct the response.
That's right, yeah. So,
well, these enzymes are ubiquitously expressed in all tissues, but as Peppi was saying, there might be some isoenzyme sort of ratio differences.
Oh, yeah.
But still, typically it is regarded that the isoenzyme 2 of the HIF-prolyl-4-hydroxylases, that is the major regulator. It's most ubiquitously expressed in the tissues. Also regarding the HIF isoforms, HIF-1 and HIF-2, they are the major isoforms. So they are the biggest players in the hypoxia response.
When you came in today to the studio here, you brought some old documents and lab books and things, and you showed us some key experiments. I was just wondering if you could tell us about an aha moment that you had. Yeah, I know that researchers have very few of them in a research career, I suppose, where you see the results of an experiment and you think, oh my gosh, this is it, look at this.
Yeah.
Please, Johanna.
Yeah, I think the first thing was because how we got to know for the first time of the HIF hydroxylation was that the original discovery, the Nobel Prize awarded discovery, was done jointly by professors Peter Radcliffe and Bill Kaelin. And Peter Radcliffe is in the University of Oxford. And actually at the time there was a Finnish postdoc, Panu Jaakkola, in his lab. And I knew Panu from the connective tissue field. And Panu was working on this HIF project, and then Panu and Peter contacted Kari and me. They were well advanced already in their study on demonstrating that the oxygen sensing regulation in HIF is a hydroxylation of proline. And we had been studying the collagen proline for hydroxylases, and at the time they were the only known enzymes to catalyze this modification. So Peter and Panu contacted us that, could you just check for us that can the collagen proline for hydroxylases hydroxylate HIF? From the beginning, we all thought that most probably not, because HIF is in the cytoplasm, collagen proline 4 hydroxylases are within the endoplasmic reticulum, so they are in different cellular compartments and don't really meet.
And there's that too.
Yes,
of course.
But we did the assay for them. They sent us the HIF peptide, and we studied, did an assay, and showed that the collagen proline hydroxylase, that's not the enzyme that hydroxylates HIF. And that was then for them a sort of a confirmation that there must be an other enzyme family. And then they quickly actually found the separate enzyme family. And that was, if I think that the hydroxylation of HIF, that original discovery from Bill Kaelin's and Peter Radcliffe's groups, was published in Science in January, in February actually, April 2001 in a back-to-back publications. And then it was October the same year that they published Peter Radcliffe's group published on the enzymes. Okay. It was so rapid.
So rapid.
And after the publication of these, or discovery of these HIF enzymes in October, we had the first activity assays done in a couple of months, 3 months, less than 3 months.
So meaning that we had already cloned, expressed affinity, purified, and set up the enzymatic assay. So we were fast.
That's not a little work. You must have been in the lab day and night.
Yeah. We had the three girls doing that. And the skillful technicians.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's not forget about the technicians.
Exactly.
How
they are crucial.
Let's do a little hurrah for them.
Yeah. But I just would like to add that actually Johanna and Kari are acknowledged in Peter Radcliffe's original Science 2001 paper describing the discovery that they had confirmed that it's not the collagen 12-4-hydroxy that catalyzed this modification in HIF.
And I think then the other aha moment, which I think Peppi could explain about, is really the discovery that they are catalytically oxygen sensors.
Say something about that.
Yeah, so that really takes us back to what I was trying to describe a bit earlier, that how ancient setting we actually had. So
the ancient setting.
Yeah, so and maybe even a bit dangerous also, because we had this huge gas bottles.
Oxygen bottles
with different oxygen concentrations in the lab so that we could flush the reagents in the enzymatic reaction with different concentrations of oxygen to equalize the mixture and then put in the enzymes and then monitor the catalytic reaction at different oxygen tensions.
Yeah.
And then basically do the basic Michaels-Menten Lineweber-Burk enzyme kinetics.
That's right.
they really show that these enzymes are really oxygen dependent. So their catalytic activity, I think the highest oxygen concentration that we tested them at was 45% oxygen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was not, we didn't reach the Vmax with that.
Yeah. Yeah, we cannot really go higher.
Yeah, we can. Yeah. So of course, I mean, you could buy oxygen in a bottle that I think up to 95% or something, but that's really flammable and not really safe to work with.
Yeah.
But that was really a eureka moment
that
that's why these enzymes are so important for oxygen sensing. That really at the level of atmospheric oxygen at sea level, so at 21%, the catalytic activity of these enzymes is already diminished.
Right.
So they're really perfect sensors for oxygen because they are sort of like in the linear part of the curve, of the kinetic curve in our body. So meaning that every change in oxygen tension is directly translated to the catalytic activity.
Mm.
And I would say that the further sort of a eureka moment was also that we discovered that the catalytic properties of the HIF prolyl-4-hydroxylases, they are to a certain extent distinct from those of the collagen prolyl-hydroxylases, despite the fact that they utilize the same reaction mechanism, belong to the same larger group of enzymes.
Yeah.
So they do have distinct differences in the catalytic properties. Collagen prolyl-hydroxylases, they are not as effective as oxygen sensors, really.
Right.
They are not. They can do their work in lower oxygen concentrations. And very importantly also, they have certain differences in their inhibitory properties also, particularly with respect to 2-oxoglutarate mimetics. 2-oxoglutarate is one factor in the enzyme reaction that is an absolute requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And you can I would say it's a very simple chemical molecule, and you can develop mimetics that block the 2-oxoglutarate binding site. And once you block that, you inhibit the enzyme.
Uh-huh.
But these two prolyl-hydroxylase families differ from each other in certain aspects on this. And this was also sort of a eureka moment that possibly it will be possible to develop selective inhibitors.
Selective inhibitors.
Yeah,
that laid the basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to say something more about inhibitors?
Let me think.
Well, I think in the first paper that we published on the catalytic properties and this oxygen sensing of the HIF prolyl for hydroxylases, that in 2003, there we had the first table on the comparison of the inhibitory properties of the collagen prolyl hydroxylases and HIF prolyl hydroxylases. And that was, of course, then the sort of, because it was immediately noticed that this hypoxia response pathway and its regulation, it is a very interesting therapeutic target. Mm. And so we could very quickly step on with this industrial collaboration into developing these HIF prolyl hydroxylase inhibitors. Mm. Because actually we had a long program already together with them on the collagen prolyl hydroxylase side.
But so if we want to take it back to a little bit to what you're doing right now. So as I understand it, there are five research groups in this unit, the hypoxia and collagen matrix unit, and lots of students, and there have been many students over the years. Can you tell us a little bit about, because this is a very strong research field at Oulu University in Finland, I mean.
Yes, you're absolutely
it's
right.
Big.
Yeah. So our faculty has trained in its history more than 300 doctors.
Wow.
And Johanna had some specific numbers on the doctors trained in these specific collagen and HIF projects. Would you tell us those numbers?
Yes, well, starting from the 1997, actually, we have produced 45 theses. And of course, much more before that. And Karim, probably in his interview, will tell about the early days and that. So it is really a huge number of PhDs. And I think what we also think, that one thing that we want to guard, is that we educate both PhDs from the natural science background and from the medical background. Mm-hmm. That's sort of our mission also, that we want to recruit also the medical students and keep this kind of a balance, because it's a fruitful balance.
That's really good. Yeah.
But you were saying that there are about 20 theses, or was it 30 theses on the HIF field already?
It's close to 20.
Close to 20,
Yes. Yeah.
So this is really the expert center in the world when it comes to these enzymes and hypoxia research.
Yes, and I would also like to say that we have very good collaborations, of course, to Peter Radcliffe's group, Bill Kaelin's group. Pippi can talk about that. But we have also a very strong European network, this Hypoxia EU network. We had a EU cost-funded action on that, and we really have a nice European hypoxia community.
That's
and
amazing.
Strong links to international, so it's like a family also.
So what are your current research interests here in the Oulu University regarding hypoxia?
If I can start, my group has moved towards translation regarding the HIF pathway and the HIF prolyl for hydroxylases, so that we try to understand what other indications there could be for these novel HIF P4S inhibitors and exploiting the HIF pathway than anemia.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And our studies, we have done studies already on ischemic diseases, so cardiac ischemia, skeletal muscle ischemia, where inhibiting the main isoenzyme HIF P4S2 appears to be very beneficial.
Say the name again.
HIF P4S2.
Yeah.
And also then, about 10 years ago, we made a discovery that actually in a gene, in a mouse line where the HIF P4S2 gene is downregulated, the mice are leaner than the wild-type mice. Mm-hmm. And actually, they have a really interesting metabolic phenotype. So they're protected against hypercholesterolemia.
Really?
Age-associated insulin resistance, against age-associated fatty liver disease. And that has taken us to do specific preclinical disease models on fatty liver, atherosclerosis, more recently also on Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, wow.
So that is really a field that we are really heavily investigating currently. So what are the other indications?
What are the other indications? There seem
exploiting?
To be a few.
And also we've done some inflammatory models, so also to show that there is this anti-inflammatory response that the HIF mediates, and that's important.
Mm. So how far are we from having that, do you think, for patients in the end? Are we 20 years away if we can find something that's you can regulate with inhibitors or activators or something, or do you think it's more than that?
I don't think we are 20 years away. It of course depends a lot on the pharma, because we are basic scientists.
Yeah,
we are not directly taking these
of course.
discoveries into patients. But if you Google, for example, clinicaltrials.gov, you do see that there are clinical trials ongoing with the HIF-PFRS inhibitors, also for other indications than anemia.
Mm.
So I personally think that the current molecules need to be tweaked to treat other diseases than anemia. But I don't think that we are that far away from not 20 years.
No, that's amazing. That's so promising, and it gives hope to patients. All right. Anyone?
Okay, from the HIF proteoglyphohydroxylase field, like Peppi, we also, of course, continuing some of the studies on different kind of potential therapeutic applications. We are interested in the anti-inflammatory functions. We have projects ongoing, for example, regarding multiple sclerosis, together with Peppi also. And there we have some promising data. That is just one example. And of course, we are also still interested in the collagen proteohydroxylases.
Yeah.
We have work ongoing on, for example, different types of cancers, because collagen is an important thing in the metastasis. And then we also have, of course, some fibrotic disease models also in relation to the collagens. And then, of course, we are also interested that, well, if you think about the discovery of the hydroxylation of HIF, many, many decades after the discovery of hydroxylation of collagens, are there other proteins that are regulated by these kind of hydroxylations?
Mm.
Are there other enzymes?
Yeah.
And this is something we are also very interested in.
Yeah.
And also, like I was saying, that we have a very, very nice international hypoxia community.
Yeah.
All these meetings where you see your colleagues, you discuss, there you gather information that is not yet, you know, in the papers, but you see them
right.
in posters and can discuss, and that's a pivotal thing also in science.
Yeah, we heard a rumor that there is an anthem. Is a hypoxia anthem?
There is an anthem. This is from the EU COST network that we set up already years back, and we had these regular meetings, and it was Professor Cormac Taylor from Ireland, Dublin.
Okay.
He's a really good guitarist and a singer, and he did the first hypoxia anthem, and that then became sort of a recurring thing in every meeting that we had.
I would like to point out really related to how nice the hypoxia community is, that I did my postdoc with Bill Kaelin at Harvard, and that was the time when the Nobel Prize was still far away, even though the original discovery was made. But I've continued to work with Bill. He's a very close friend. Really, to be on the edge of your field via the connections that we have, both to the Kaelin lab and to the Radcliffe lab, I think are really important.
Yes.
Yeah, and very recently we made a discovery together with Bill Kaelin's lab that actually among the enzyme family of 2-oxoglutarate-dependent dioxygenases, that the collagen and the HIF proteoglyphohydroxylases are part of some epigenetic regulators.
Uh-huh.
So histone demethylases. So the histone demethylases are actually also oxygen sensors.
Uh-huh.
So we do believe that there is important... There are important oxygen sensors beyond the HIF system that are needed to convey the oxygen balance in our body.
How did you feel when you heard that the Nobel Prize was given to hypoxia research 2019?
Well, that's an excellent question. So I've been organizing for the past 10 years a Nobel Prize announcement event at our campus. So where we first have a local expert telling about the discovery of the previous year, and then we follow online the announcement of the current year's prize from Sweden. And we were in this event and we heard the first name, William. And immediately we guessed with Johanna that it must be Bill Kaelin, and that now the hypoxia field gets the prize. And I was as a chair and I was like, it was going all wild.
Sort of praying there.
Yes. So that was really a nice moment. And after that, I went to my office and immediately called Bill Kaelin. Wow. It was 5 a.m. in Boston. And he picked up the phone and said, how does it feel like to be the Nobel laureate? And he's like, he had just received the call like 45 minutes before.
Oh, wow. That is amazing.
And then later, when they had the ceremonies in December 2019 at Stockholm, the Bill Kaelin Lab alumni organized a scientific meeting that I was one of the speakers there, and we got to take part in the festivities. Oh. So that was also something really, really super special.
Yeah.
And also I was really taken by getting an invitation to a Nobel luncheon before the festivities in Stockholm and see all the friends there. And
that was great. Is a big moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was a big moment for the entire field. It was so great.
Yeah, and I think it tells also a lot about the key scientists in the field, Bill Kaelin and Peter Radcliffe, that how they wanted to share that moment and the prize with the field.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we are coming to the end here, but I think there are so many researchers, and it is a struggle to research. If you have any last words to encourage your fellow researchers around the Nordics, because you're such a great example of bringing something from bench to bedside, and it can be done.
It can be done. Research is an adventure. Yeah. It's fun.
Yes, and I hope that this story tells that how important it is to carry out basic research. So you never know what will come out of it. It was very crucial that we had the knowledge on the collagen pool for hydroxysis, enabled our really fast start on these HIF enzymes and this pathway. And now it's already in the form of medication to patients. So it's really a basic scientist's dream come true, this story.
It really is.
So what we did, and not that long ago, only 20 years ago, in the lab bench is now in the pharmacy.
Yeah, I would say that's the ultimate motivation that
it's
you have in the medical field.
Mm, the ultimate motivation. I'm so happy for you that you've had this happen in your lifetime. And I think maybe there's potential here for another story coming up with a different indication, a different disease, a different angle. This very important class of enzymes and sister group of enzymes too, of course. So with that, we thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And effort to tell us your story. We'll hope to see you again and maybe talk about another story at another point in time, maybe 5 or 10 years from now. That would be excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Happy to do that in the future also.
Yes. Let's keep in touch.
This is The Science of the Matter,